Okay, we're talking to Don Keyes, who was a very important part of Wacky's history. He was the National Program Director for McLendon Broadcasting. Don, tell us about the beginnings of Wacky, how that all came about.
Gordon McLendon, who was the president of our company and a brilliant innovator in contemporary broadcasting, was always on the lookout for a good physical facility that was for sale. By a good physical facility, I mean something in the middle or low in the dial with about 5,000 watts. Didn't care if it was directional or non-directional, but it had to be low in the dial to get the best coverage per kilowatt. Along came WGRC in Louisville with 5,000 watts on 790, which had a fine signal over Louisville and Indiana, and apparently was offered at the right price. I don't recall the price. But it seemed to be a good business investment, so he went ahead and made an offer and did indeed buy the station.
Now, about how long was it in getting the process underway from the time you became involved, I guess from the time that you knew about it till the time that you were in Louisville putting the radio station on the air? How long did it take?
I don't recall specifically, but it doesn't take long. You simply work out a deal with the seller, and when he agrees, the contract is filed with the FCC, and normally it'll take, in those days, 60 to 90 days in the FCC before approval is granted. And once it is granted, you are then clear to go in and have a closing of the sale with all the necessary lawyers present and all the papers signed. And on the day of closing, you hand a check to the seller and you physically take over the operation of the radio station. I'm going to say it was 60 to 90 days from start to finish.
So you knew about the process maybe 60 to 90 days out from you actually taking control of the radio station. Did you start preparing for an air staff and a format then?
Yes, indeed. We knew what we were going to do. McLendon's philosophy of buying and programming a radio station was really no different than any other business philosophy, in that you, a successful businessman, will find a void in the marketplace and will fill that void. I don't care if it's a shoe store. If there are no shoe stores in Main Street, a logic might dictate that now's a good time to open a shoe store. He would do the same thing with a radio station. If there was no or some lousy top 40 format in a given city, and we knew we could go in there and kick butt, that would be a major decision in whether or not we would buy the radio station. And in this case, of course, the competition in Louisville was virtually non-existent. It was unbelievably bad. And I went to the market and listened to the radio in the hotel room for a couple of days, and I couldn't get over how bad it was. And I thought, my God, this town is ripe for the picking. And sure enough, it was.
So what went on behind the scenes, other than the technical FCC part, to get Wacky on the air? What did you have to do as National Program Director?
Well, the programming for, in this particular case, Top 40, was pretty well set. We had had tremendous success in Texas, our home state, with our flagship, KLIF in Dallas, KTSA in San Antonio, KILT in Houston, and KEEL in Shreveport. All of these were cut from the same mold as KLIF, the flagship. So we knew exactly what we were going to do. There was no variation from the plan. So my main job was to hire air personnel, both DJs, program director, and news people, get the jingles cut by PAMS, in this case, in Dallas, get promotions scheduled for the next several months, get the promos cut for those promotions using Dallas voices. So when I got off the plane in Louisville, I had an armful of electrical transcriptions. This is before the days of tape carts. Electrical transcriptions that had on them all kinds of promos and stuff that went along with the new format, you know, jingles and promos and little voice drops and one thing and another. And I had to get all that stuff ready, get all the people hired and ready to go, and set up a target date to be on the air, and get all the people in Louisville prior to that date, get them settled in their new homes and so forth. Quite a bit involved to get all that set up, but it was a lot of fun.
Let's talk about the original air staff and program director. Do you remember who those guys were?
I remember Jack Sanders, of course, did Afternoon Drive. I think Phil Page did the morning show, and the rest of it is kind of a blur. Jim Brand was there at one point, but I don't know the actual dates. Jim Light, his name is Jimmy Lightfoot. Jimmy was, I think he did the all-night show, and he ended up at some big job at Westinghouse over the years. Bill Gill was our news director. I don't know whatever happened to him, but he was excellent. He had this electric, exciting, demanding delivery. And in those days, you know, Top 40 news on the hour was, machine gun delivery, lots of actualities, and lots of drama. And Bill was excellent at it, just superb at it. And I often wonder what the hell's ever happened to him.
He went to ABC, I understand.
I think you're right. That rings a faint bell with me, but God, that was years ago.
All right, let's talk about Jack Sanders. Jack is probably the best known of the early wacky DJs. Tell us a little bit more about Jack.
Well, he was a wild man. He was goofy, a good kid. He never gave me any problems. He was wild in the air, uninhibited, just cooking from 3 to 6, and of course the kids ate him up. I had a chance to visit with him years later. This is an interesting evening I spent. He was dating Audrey Williams, Hank Williams' widow, who was a statuesque blonde with Icelandic blue eyes. And she was Hank Jr.'s mother, you know. And Jack was dating her, and I happened to go to Nashville one evening. They invited me out to dinner, so the three of us went to dinner and went back to Hank Williams' house afterwards, where Audrey was kind enough to show me through the house and the pool out back and the cars in the garage. That was a trip. She showed me the car, to use her words, "This is the car Daddy died in." And it was, sure enough, it was the car that Hank died in on his trip to Canton, Ohio, way back whenever that was.
All right, let's talk about Gordon McLendon. What kind of guy was he?
Brilliant. I've never known such an intellect. I've never known such a charmer. He was a fine executive. He could get people to do anything he wanted them to do because of his absolute charm. He was like a big brother to me. I love him to this day. If he were alive today, he would be 84, and I just turned 74 last week. So during these days, when I was 26 and he was 36, he was like a big brother and a brilliant, brilliant intellect. He had a mind that soared above the mundane. He thought of things no one else had thought of. He had a grip of the concept of programming that, frankly, nobody else had in those days. And much of his stuff, as you know, was copied over the years. And I want to give him credit for all the good stuff he did because he was a brilliant, brilliant man. He was not difficult to work for. He was demanding, but in a very productive way. It wasn't a case of being picky and being, irascible. He knew what he wanted, and he also had great leadership skills to get what he wanted. He was a hell of a guy.
Did he actually make the decisions to do various things at Wacky, or would he pretty much go through you, just say, "Hey, this is what I want," or "Let's just do it the way we did it at Cliff"?
Exactly. Because by that time, we were four stations deep into the Top 40 format, and it was a piece of cake. We had it scheduled out, what happens in day one, what happens in day two, and then the treasure hunt comes up in day 10, and blah, blah, blah. You project this out for 6 months, and it was a killer schedule. From that standpoint, he was involved. But as I said, four stations behind us, it was pretty much cut and dried as to what was going to happen in Louisville.
All right, tell us about Wacky coming on the air as WAKY.
At every station we put on the air, and I cannot think of an exception, we bought the station, and right after we got approval of the sale and we closed the sale, we went for 3 days with what we called a marathon record play. We chose a record that was really objectionable, to really get on your nerves, and play it constantly for 3 days in a row. The disc jockeys were ordered to make no mention of the fact that they were playing the same record 3 days in a row. They would say, "Now here's Elvis with Hound Dog, and this other record would play. Here's Doris Day with so-and-so, and the same record would play." And the jockeys would never acknowledge what was going on. It drove listeners absolutely bananas. Now, the idea of this was, here's a radio station that was for sale. Nobody listened to it. It was a real dog. We wanted to do something to call attention to that frequency, in this case 790. We would play the same record over and over so people in Louisville would start talking. "Have you heard about what that station's doing? That crazy station, they must be nuts down there. They're playing the same record over and over." And people would say, "Really? I'll tune in and see." They would tune in and see. They would get disgusted. They'd go to work. They'd come back in the afternoon thinking, "Surely that station isn't doing that anymore." They'd tune in, "We're still doing it." Drove them absolutely bananas. This went on for 3 days. We did this at all of our stations using different records that were available at that time. In Wacky, we used Cheb Woolley's The Purple People Eater and ran it for 72 hours without acknowledging what we were doing. Probably, I say probably because I don't remember, at 9 o'clock in the morning on the fourth day, we switched to Wacky from WGRC. By that time, the listening fervor had reached such a pitch that it was now time to unveil what we're doing. And at 9 o'clock, the first Wacky jingle hit the air, and Phil Page was doing the morning show, let's say, and away we went with the Top 40 format. People went out of their minds. It was just wonderful.
So during this three-day marathon of the Purple People Eater, it was still WGRC, and was it the Wacky Jocks doing it, or was it the GRC Jocks, or were they one and the same?
The Wacky Jocks. As I recall, they were just voices at that point. Once they broke with wacky call letters, they became Phil Page, Jack Sanders, Jim Brand, what have you. I think they were just voices at that point, just playing the records over and over.
Probably gave them some good experience behind the board.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Kind of warming up and getting ready for things.
Yep.
Let's talk about some of the early wacky promotions that you did. You mentioned Treasure Hunt, and what was that all about?
These promotions, again, were pretty standard. We did them in all the markets. I really can't address Wacky's promotion specifically, but the Treasure Hunt usually was a check in the amount of X thousand dollars. In Dallas, it was $50,000. And we'd bury the check somewhere and give clues on the air as to where it was buried or where it wasn't buried. The treasure hunters would go out and try to find it. And then we had the usual promotions geared to teenagers, the school spirit contest and the walking man contest and mystery street, mystery telephone number, on and on and on and on and on, ad nauseum, to keep the air of excitement going in the format. This wasn't just playing the top 40 tunes. Everything had promotion worked into it. This was the main difference, by the way, between the Todd Storrs stations and the McClendon stations. We both follow the same music policies, but McClendon added that ingredient of promotion that made such a hell of a difference.
Now, what were your duties as national program director once you got the radio station up and running? What did you do?
Constant monitoring. I'd slip into the market unannounced, get my hotel room, get my radio on, and monitor the station to find out if they were still adhering to the basic tenets of the format. And if they were not, we'd have a meeting with the PD and the general manager and say, I've been listening, and here's what I've found, let's correct these things. And then from then on, I go back to Dallas and spend a week, and then I go to Houston and do the same thing.
Now, what about the competition in Louisville?
Many.
Nobody responded?
No.
I mean, during the whole time that McClendon owned the radio station, nobody even came close?
Again, you're stretching my memory. I couldn't say that. I just know that when we went in, there was no competition. It was just criminal. We just raped, pillaged, and stole.
Tell us about the numbers Wacky got.
In the first 8 weeks, we had a 60% share of audience. Never had anything like that before or since. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Actually, unbelievable. We had a lock in that town that you wouldn't believe. The big deal was WINN doing 15-minute segments of various artists of the day. Everything from Mantovani, mind you, to Frank Sinatra, to Ella, to the Four Lads, 15-minute segments. Unbelievable. And we went in against that.
And what was WKLO doing? Do you remember?
No, I don't. Probably done damn little, because that was the big deal in those days. WIN was it. WINN was it. That was the music and news station for Louisville, Kentucky.
What about WHAS? They had 50,000 watts. Were they just doing network programming?
Oh, sure. Watts, schmatz, it means nothing. You know, if you don't have the programming on the air, you can have 500,000 watts. If you don't have any programming, who cares?